Welcome to the Sleepy Cues podcast, where Linda Schmulowitz
and Jessica Sawicki will share answers to all your questions related to your children's sleep and parenting of young children. We are both certified gentle sleep coaches.
Thanks for tuning in to hear the answers to the many questions that come up with the families we work with.
Hi, welcome to the Sleepy Cues podcast. I'm Jessica Sawicki, and I have my co-host Linda here with me today. And we have a special guest, which we're really excited about. Naomi Rosenkrantz is here. She's a marriage and family therapist who specializes in reproductive and mental health. Welcome, Naomi. Why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself, your background, and how you got into this profession?
Sure. Hi, Jessica. Hi, Linda. Nice to see you both. I started my career actually as a scientist. So I was getting my PhD in neuroscience, and quite a few years into the doctorate program, I decided that although I love science, it really wasn't where my passion lay. So I ended up teaching high school science for a few years and eventually ended up getting my master's in marriage and family therapy, which is what I do now. I really love what I do. I'm really passionate about it, and it's such a privilege to work with the various families that I work with. I do specialize in reproductive mental health. That includes infertility, perinatal and infant loss, postpartum anxiety, depression, traumatic births, and supporting parents navigating the NICU are some of the areas that are included in the blanket term reproductive health.
Thank you so much for sharing that and for being here with us today. So can you go into a little bit of detail about what sorts of concerns parents come to you with? Is it mostly moms? Do you work with dads as well? Do you see couples? If you can share a little bit more.
I work with all types of families. I work with couples. I work with people who identify as moms, people who identify as dads, people who identify as birthing people, which includes transgender as well as non-binary families. And so for inclusivity, you'll hear me say moms, dads, parents, as well as birthing people, just to be more inclusive in my language. So there is what I call the societal lie that having a baby brings couples closer. You see social media perpetuating this image of two people in a couple staring lovingly at each other, staring lovingly at the baby, all clean and makeup. And they don't look at all sleep deprived. And that's not the reality, but it does serve to make parents, particularly birthing people and moms, feel like a failure. They feel like they're doing something wrong because they don't look like those images in social media. So what we do know is, according to Gottman, who's an incredible therapist, very well known, 75% of couples actually report a decrease in marital satisfaction after having a baby. Having a baby can be very, very stressful. The birthing person or mom is physically healing. The parents are sleep deprived. There's more financial pressure. Oftentimes there's difficulty in communication. There's expectations in childcare that aren't being met. There's a lack of quality time between the parents. There can be a decrease in intimacy. And if one person is suffering from a perinatal anxiety or perinatal depression, a lot of the work is really done to help couples navigate this time with compassion. And it oftentimes includes a lot of psychoeducation about perinatal mood and anxiety disorders. Another area that I work a lot in is helping couples navigate perinatal and infant loss, which is another set of reproductive health that is unfortunately very common. The couples or the mom or the dad or the birthing person often really needs the space to process the grief that they experience in the loss.
So just speaking to what you were saying before about having a baby is a tremendous stressor on your relationship. Many years ago when I did the training through Postpartum Support International, and they talk about the U-shaped curve of marital happiness. And I remember sharing that with Jess, and I share it with the moms in my groups more often than my second time moms, because the new moms, it's hard for them to hear it. They're not quite ready. But when I point out You know, we're on the downward slope when you are having a baby, and it actually keeps going down farther before things start to look up. I find it really validating to see that and to know it's expected that this is going to be hard. It's expected that this is going to be a stressor on your relationship, among the other things that are happening in your life at this point as well. But sometimes it's too much to hear, but I think Jess found it validating. Do you remember that conversation?
I totally do. I totally do. And it was very, very validating. And I feel like we all need that friend to tell us the truth. But yes, I do. I do.
It's just one of those things that I wish more people would be honest about. Because if more families would just be honest about their experience in that postpartum period, it would prevent a lot of moms from feeling like such failures.
Yeah, I remember most recently I got a text from a friend of mine with her third, and she's like, I'm crying a lot. Is this normal? I mean, she was still in the hospital and she had just given birth. I'm like, yes, your hormones are going to be completely like out of whack. Physically, you're going to look like a mess, and probably inside emotionally, you're going to feel like a mess. But she had forgotten, and she's like, is this normal? I'm like, yes, it's all normal. I mean, obviously to a certain point, which I'm sure you'll talk to us more about, but do you find that majority of the postpartum moms you work with come for a brief period of time for support, or do you work with them like ongoing along the way?
So what I say to that is this process, in at least for me, is incredibly collaborative, and no one size fits all. And so some families come in very short term to address the symptoms of their anxiety, their depression, their perinatal mood or anxiety disorder. For others, having a baby really brings up some other underlying issues or past traumas. So what I've seen this bring up for a lot of parents or moms or birthing people include sexual trauma. The birth process can really bring up a lot of those difficult memories. And there's something very vulnerable about being on that table. In addition, just some family of origin issues oftentimes come up as we learn how to parent. Oftentimes, how our parents parented us become even that much more highlighted. And oftentimes, it's having to work through some of those issues in order to be able to parent effectively. Also, if there's a little cracks in a relationship, there's nothing like a baby to make those cracks into craters. Mm-hmm. And so sometimes there's some pre-existing struggles with couples. And so some of those issues end up requiring a little bit longer term therapy.
So I know you see parents who are struggling with infertility and certainly perinatal loss. Can you talk a little bit about how you see this influencing those parents as they go on to have children later? Because this is, I know, something that I certainly see, I'm sure Jess does as well, in some of the families that we work with.
Yes, this is a very, very, very important topic. And pregnancy post-loss can be very, very, very stressful. We often see an increase in perinatal anxiety, postpartum anxiety, after struggles with fertility as well as loss. It is incredibly important to be able to get some support with a therapist that's trained in grief and loss. Finding a therapist that really specializes in perinatal and infant loss to support you. This is one of the most disenfranchised griefs, and therefore it kind of causes families who have experienced this loss, moms who have experienced this loss, to feel like they're crazy, like they're grieving too long, like that there's something wrong with them because they're so sad. You hear a lot of very unhelpful languaging around this. At least you know you could get pregnant. It's okay, you'll have another, right? And this serves to really not only disenfranchise the grief and invalidate the experience, but prevent people from getting the help and processing this experience, which then kind of feeds into the anxious pregnancy. Because when you don't have the space to process grief, one tends to be more anxious in pregnancy. What I also see is a lot of guilt pregnancy post-loss, because oftentimes parents feel, or moms feel, or birthing people feel like they're replacing the baby who died. And so there's kind of that struggle of being grateful for having a healthy baby and feeling guilty for having a healthy baby. And so what I kind of talk to families about is that you could hold both emotions. You could hold the greatness for having that healthy baby, and that you could hold the grief simultaneously, and that there's no replacement babies. Your baby who died will always be your baby. And it doesn't matter if you have 10 more babies after that, they'll always be your baby. There's no replacement babies. So that's kind of some of the things that I see. There's also a pressure to be happy and grateful after mm-hmm. the postpartum experience. So when someone struggles so hard to have a baby, or they've had losses, there's very much this pressure to feel grateful, to feel happy. But the postpartum experience, I mean, it's not
happy always.
you're exhausted. Your body is just doesn't feel good. Birth is traumatic to your body, and you're not sleeping. It's just, there's so many things that are difficult in the postpartum period. And it's almost like people who go through fertility and loss don't feel like they have permission to complain.
Right.
And that makes it a lot more difficult to hold and honor that experience.
Yeah. I don't know about you, Jess, but I have a question on my history form that asks about, have you experienced infertility? You know, all of those questions. And whenever I see that, and I had one recently where I think that the mom had like 4 or 5 miscarriages, they'd gone through so much. And now here they are talking to me. So now they have a child who's not sleeping, which is of course stressful as well. And so I always try to start every conversation when I see that, to acknowledge it and to say, like, you've already had a very stressful experience prior to parenthood. And in that instance, in particular, the mom also had a traumatic birth. I mean, there were just so many things. And here you are now, we're trying to help your child sleep. And this part, now that he's here, hasn't been easy. And then there are going to be things that come up where you may feel guilt because you worked so hard to have him. And I always just say, like, let's try to have an open dialogue about those things. If things are coming up that you're feeling as we're going along, it's important. It's important to acknowledge it, because all of that really matters. But you're right. Nobody is given the space to talk about these things, especially with miscarriage, because it's supposed to not be discussed. Oh, well, you were early. You know, nobody should know about that. And so there's so much isolation that surrounds it as well.
Can you explain to our listeners the difference between postpartum anxiety and postpartum depression? I don't know if you can tell us a little bit of the signs to look for in themselves, and more importantly, for their friends to seek help. I remember when my last one was born, I definitely felt the postpartum, I think more depression, but probably a little bit of anxiety as well. And I hadn't realized, like, I did, but I didn't. And then you're like, oh, I know what to look for. Until I'll never forget my friend talking to me. She's like, okay, no, this is not normal. I kept on saying, oh, no, it's fine. The hormones are normal. The crying is normal. She's like, yes, it is, but no. And she literally hung up the phone and called my husband right away. And she's like, okay, we need to get her help, because you think it's normal, like we said in the beginning of the podcast, the crying and the hormones, but there is definitely a point where it would be great for the listeners to know or to hear those signs that they should look for when they should go out and seek help.
Thank you for sharing that, Jessica. And especially, I would imagine for you, Jessica, where this was your fourth child and there's almost this.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, I've done this 3 other times. There's no way that I have a diagnosable postpartum.
Correct. Issue. Correct. And it's funny because I tell this with my clients all the time. They're like, I'm coming to you to help with my 4th or 5th child with sleep, like you would think I'd get it. And I'm like, well, no, every child, every situation is different. And here I was with my 4th child in a very different situation.
Right. And Jessica, and the 4th was a girl, right?
Right. After 3 boys, I was like, yay.
You should have been happy. This is what yes. you wanted.
Correct. Very good point. Very good point. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you could almost see that pressure of course I'm fine. Like, this is what I wanted. I wanted the girl. And why do I feel this way? right? And so these questions are so important. And before I speak to the more well-known postpartum anxiety and postpartum depression, I really wanted to kind of speak to some of the other mental health struggle that we see during the postpartum period.
Yes, please do so.
Okay. So there's anxiety, depression. There's also OCD. There's post-traumatic stress disorder. There could be psychosis. There could be bipolar. Now, these are a group of mental health struggles that we oftentimes see an increase in the postpartum period. The thing about all of these is that many of the symptoms overlap. And so it's going to be incredibly important due to the comorbidity of many of these struggles and diagnoses to go to a reproductive therapist or reproductive psychiatrist to get fully assessed. So I kind of wanted to point that out because oftentimes families go and get like a specific drug that's oftentimes just kind of given out if someone's struggling with symptoms of depression or anxiety. The thing is that there could be other diagnoses such as bipolar that wouldn't be helpful to get an SSRI. In fact, it increases the mania and could lead into psychosis. So that's why I'm saying that it's really important to get a full assessment with a provider that really is aware and knowledgeable about the various possibilities of diagnoses in the postpartum period, as well as the fact that there's a lot of comorbidity between all of these as well. We often see that there's a comorbidity between anxiety and depression, as well as symptom overlap. I think it might be helpful to kind of be aware if you're pregnant or considering getting pregnant or postpartum, some of the things that therapists or reproductive psychiatrists oftentimes look for. Symptoms during pregnancy is one of them. If you're already feeling anxious during pregnancy, chances are postpartum, you're probably going to feel even more anxious. Personal or family history of perinatal mood anxiety disorders, sensitivity to hormonal changes. So if you had sensitivity to hormonal birth control or you have really bad PMS, it puts you at a higher risk for perinatal mood anxiety disorders. Struggles with fertility, social factors, inadequate social support is one of the risk factors for perinatal mood and anxiety disorders. So I always say build your tribe. If you are pregnant, we're not made to do this alone. Build your tribe, build your support, see who can help you. Financial stress, poverty, history of loss is a big one. Traumatic birth. If your baby is in the NICU, there's a higher incidence of perinatal and anxiety disorders. Abrupt discontinuation of breastfeeding. If you're going to wean, please don't do it abruptly. Please do it slowly in order not to offset or increase perinatal mood and anxiety disorders. There's a whole other set of risk factors, but those are some of the primary ones that we've seen. Now, to answer your question, the difference between postpartum anxiety and postpartum depression. Anxiety is just more of like a fear and worry base. There's persistent worry or fear. There's feelings of irritability. There's a lot of agitation. I often see trouble sleeping, a lot of insomnia, a lot of avoidance. I had one woman actually hide all the knives. I had another woman, she wouldn't go near the steps and she lived on a 3-story house. There's a lot of these avoidance, a lot of scary thoughts, a feeling like you're losing control. Whereas depression, the hallmark of it is sadness. As Jessica said, a lot of crying. There's also a lot of anxiety, can be a lot of anxiety. Sleep disturbances, appetite disturbances, kind of like this overall feeling of just not having energy. And understanding that postpartum depression looks different than how oftentimes you envision depression, because the parent still has to get up, still has to feed the baby, still has to take care of the baby. And so oftentimes there's a pushing through and there's not the stereotypical, like I'm lying in bed and can't get out of bed because they don't have that choice. And so it's really just this persistent feeling of hopelessness, helplessness, feeling like a failure, feeling like I'm a terrible, terrible mom. Those are some of the differences that we see, although a lot of times there's a lot of overlap.
I just have a question mostly for our audience is that from what we said before, it is normal to be hormonal the first few weeks, but at what point, because there's also that whole baby blues, right? I know it's not so black and white and I completely understand that, but is there a certain point where things are turning over and it's like, you know what, now it's out of the baby blue phase and you should be feeling a little bit better, but you're not. Is there like a time period or not necessarily?
Jessica, I am so, so happy you asked that question because this is very important. Baby blues are considered 2 weeks postpartum. If past 2 weeks, you're not feeling like yourself and the symptoms really impacting your daily life and your ability to take care of your baby. If past 2 weeks, you're still very, very teary, you're incredibly anxious, you're having a lot of scary thoughts, you really don't feel like yourself, that is a time to really get some support and some help. The earlier you do it, the more we can kind of prevent a more severe prognosis or progression of the perinatal mood anxiety disorder.
Also, I just wanted to add in there, postpartum rage is a thing. I think it's worthwhile to just mention that and to have it said out loud because I hear from so many moms, especially towards their partner, like I feel this intense rage towards him and just acknowledging that because it's real. And I don't know if it fits in as part of any sort of like clinical symptoms, but that there's a lot of that I find.
Thank you, Linda. Yes, definitely. I think that you could have rage towards your partner without having a diagnosable perinatal mood or anxiety disorder. I think that a piece of that is definitely diagnosable where there's that irritability, that agitation, that rage, which is very common. And then there's the population where it's kind of part of that 75% people who are experiencing a decrease in marital satisfaction because their partner is driving them crazy. They're not understanding. They're not compassionate enough. They're really not filling their needs in the way that they need to be met. To that, I'll always say, please communicate with your partner. Our partners aren't mind readers. We have to be able to identify our needs and what we need and communicate them to our partner to kind of decrease some of the irritability towards our partner. Also honoring the fact that postpartum rage is a thing and more common than people want to admit.
Yes, for sure. So you spoke a little bit to this in the last question, but I was wondering if you could just go a little bit more into how you often see postpartum anxiety manifest itself. And then what kinds of treatment is there? I often will say to moms, anxiety is something that kind of can live within us for a long time. And it's something that you learn how to cope with. And that's what I find a lot of therapists can be so helpful with is just teaching those coping skills and how you manage it. So yeah, if you can share some of that.
Yes, coping skills are incredibly important and the human race would be better with more coping skills for all of us. And the great thing about anxiety is one of those things that you can help with various techniques. And so first I'll talk about the ways that I've seen anxiety manifest itself the most. And that is in very scary thoughts. They're called intrusive thoughts. They're incredibly common, and it's something bad happening to the baby, like you're going to drop the baby's going to stop breathing, the baby's going to suffocate, and there's a lot of like checking on the baby, in addition to intrusive thoughts about us hurting our babies, us suffocating the baby with a pillow, us shaking the baby, just kind of these intrusive thoughts about us harming the baby, intrusive thoughts about us harming ourselves. Kind of this passing suicidal ideation, like intrusive thoughts about life being better without us. And that is one of the biggest hallmarks that I have seen in postpartum anxiety. And these thoughts are very distressing to the mom, which is often, but not always, how we differentiate this from psychosis. So oftentimes moms are very afraid to talk about their intrusive thought because they think that they're going to be Baker acted. And so it's one of these things that reproductive mental health counselors should be very aware of, is kind of this way to allow moms to talk about their scary thoughts, which is one of the biggest hallmarks that I've seen in postpartum anxiety as well as OCD, and feel safe that they're not going to be put in the hospital. What I tell families, moms, birthing people who are very, very anxious is that we need to build a foundation of health, which means proper nutrition, 5 hours of uninterrupted sleep a night, and getting out and moving. Without these three components, you could give as many coping techniques as you would like, but the foundation is not solid. And so that's kind of where I start. Some of the other things that I also utilize is I'm a certified yoga teacher, and so I utilize a lot of breathing techniques. I'm doing somatic experiencing 3-year program, which means that I really try to employ a lot of body-based interventions. So we kind of learn how to track the nervous system and try to re-regulate the nervous system in a very safe manner. Because I find that if someone could really pay attention to their body, pay attention to their nervous system, and notice the activation, and are given techniques to re-regulate, that will help with anxiety a lot, because anxiety is agitation of the nervous system. I do a lot of grounding techniques. I also use some cognitive interventions, like how realistic is that fear? A little bit of exposure therapy when possible, because a lot of intrusive thoughts are not really conducive to exposure therapy. So I find postpartum anxiety, sometimes exposure therapy may not be the most effective, but when we're able to utilize it, we do. One of the biggest things that I ask clients to not do is Dr. Google. Dr. Google is not helpful.
I say it all the time to moms in group. I always say, no Googling, just stop. It's not going to be helpful. It's actually going to make it worse. There are no answers there, truly. So, yeah.
Yeah, no, Dr. Google does not help anxiety. And to decrease social media in general, social media really both feeds into the sense of guilt and shame and feeling like a failure, as well as anxiety. We also use some journaling. We sometimes write down our scary thoughts and our anxiety and the reason why we're scared. I try to involve partners for that connected piece so that the partner feels like they can be helpful. So we try to determine ways that partners can be helpful. Sometimes it's holding hands. Sometimes it's massaging. Sometimes it's just everything's okay. You're a great mom. Everything's going to be okay. And in addition to some kind of mindfulness techniques, how to be present, mindful walks, trying to be present while taking walks outside and noticing all the greens or noticing the bugs or noticing just something in the surroundings to kind of get clients out of their head back into the present moment. And I really stress social support and connection, trying to get people to help you, trying not to isolate yourself. Try to surround yourself with people that are going to be supportive and not shaming. Those are kind of some of the ways that I found to be helpful.
They're great. They're great techniques. Some of them I feel like we could do on a day-to-day basis even without it, like the meditation and the mindfulness and going for a walk, I'm sure, are also a great technique. Can you talk to us a little bit about clinical options for parents seeking treatment?
Yeah. So there's three components to care. There's therapy, there's medication, and there's social support and practical. And so I really, and I've said this before, but I really truly believe in a collaborative treatment plan where we just discuss all the options and the clients really feel the autonomy to make their own choices. This is such an out of control experience. Feeling so sad and feeling so anxious feels really difficult and out of control. So the more control I can help the client feel in making these decisions, the better off the client will be. I've found that if a client can benefit from medication, it's oftentimes most effective in combination with therapy, as well as practical support and support groups and friends and families.
When you do talk about medication with patients or clients, what concerns do you often hear about taking them?
So when a client would benefit from medication, the concerns that I most hear is concerns about taking medication while pregnant or breastfeeding, concerns about not feeling like themselves. Is this going to like change my personality? Is this going to make me into a zombie? I've heard that. And I've also heard fears around being reliant on medication. Am I going to need this forever? And to those concerns, I refer them to Mother to Baby, which is a site that really talks about all the risks of medication during pregnancy and postpartum, as well as reproductive psychiatrists who can really provide both the risks and the benefits of the medication. And it's really important to weigh the effects of perinatal anxiety, depression, with the risks and benefits of medication. And so it's really weighing those two things in order to make a choice that's best for mom and best for baby.
I think that's very helpful. Some parents are resistant in seeking out help or even through medication as well. But knowing that, like you said, you have to really outweigh and see the benefits that you can get. You work with parents one-on-one, but I know you also run a lot of support groups. I would love for our audience to hear all the options that they have on the different support groups that you run. And if you can just tell us also where our listeners can find you.
There are so many support groups. It's pretty incredible. Mama, MAMMHA, has a postpartum anxiety and depression support group. Partum Support International has so many different types of support groups. It's pretty incredible. I'm most familiar with them because I facilitate their perinatal and infant loss group and have in the past facilitated their postpartum anxiety and depression support groups. And so they have infertility, postpartum anxiety, depression, pregnancy post-loss, moms of multiples. Just really, there's so many options through Postpartum Support International. For those struggling with fertility, Resolve is a really good organization and they have support groups. Return to Zero is one of my favorite organizations. They have a lot of information for lost families and they also have support groups, which I've heard are really, really great. There's just a lot of options out there, but those are just some of the ones I'm most familiar with.
You know, in terms of licensing, I know that like some programs you can't access, you know, when you're out of state, especially as far as insurance coverage goes. I didn't know if you work mostly with people virtually or if you do more in person or how that works out. But also was wondering, and I only know about this through Postpartum Support International, if you know of any groups for dads, because that's a resource that I've had a really hard time finding. And I hear a lot of moms asking for that. I don't know how many dads are actually asking for it, but many moms asking for their partners.
Thank you, Linda. And so happy you brought that up. I feel like dads are the most disenfranchised partners.
They kind of are.
There's so much attention towards moms, and one out of every 10 dads actually have a perinatal mood and anxiety disorder. It's very stressful for the male partner as well, or for the partner in general. And so to answer that question, I'm pretty sure Postpartum Support International has one for dads.
They do.
For loss, there's couples groups actually that includes both partners. And unfortunately, I don't know a whole lot of other support groups specifically for dads.
Yeah,
and it's really unfortunate. I'm fairly certain some of the fertility communities have support groups for dads in terms of fertility, but I don't know a lot of other partum support groups for dads. I'm pretty certain there's some Facebook ones, but that's pretty unfortunate.
Yeah, it really is.
Unfortunate. So in terms of finding providers, if in Florida, I'm licensed in Florida, but Postpartum Support International actually has a link that you could do to find a provider in your area. So you could find a provider not only in your area, but you can also determine whether or not they take your insurance. So you could look for a provider in Maine who takes Blue Cross Blue Shield. So that would be a really good resource to find a provider in your area. Postpartum Support International also has the Maternal Mental Health Helpline. They also have another line in order to be connected with resources. In addition, their coordinators also, their job is to find local resources.
Great. Thank you so much for coming here today, answering our questions. I know that our listeners are going to find it very helpful and such valuable information. So thank you. I'm going to share in the show notes a lot of the resources that you shared just now, so people can go there and click on those links to get quick access to that information. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you, Linda. Thank you, Jessica. Thank you for having me today.